Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Lozada, and today's birth story is with Kara Franstead. Kara and her husband had never considered having a home birth, but as the pandemic hit and there was a real possibility of her husband having to miss the birth of their third child, they looked into it, even though she was already 38 weeks pregnant. It turned out to be their best birth experience yet. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Full Circle Prenatal, the number one recommended prenatal multivitamin by both Lily Nichols and myself that provides optimal nutrition support before, during, and after pregnancy. For 10% off your order, use the code BIRTHFUL at fullcircleprenatal.com. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Simply Breastfeeding, a prenatal breastfeeding course to help nursing parents feel confident with their newborns. Learn more at birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding and use the code BIRTHFUL for 15% off. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Birthful. And if what you hear is helpful, you know what to do. Subscribe. It's free, and that way you're not going to miss a thing. And to support this podcast, please support its sponsors, which for this week's case are Full Circle Prenatal and Simply Breastfeeding. Also, a quick reminder that if you've only prepared for the having a birth part and not so much for the having a baby part, you're only halfway there. Get prepared by taking my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes at birthfulcourses.com, and you can do them in your pajamas and rewatch them after baby is born or as a refresher for your second baby. But you do want to take them before baby arrives, so go sign up now at birthfulcourses.com. All right, so my episode today is with Kara Franstead, who had done quite a bit of preparation to get ready for her third birth before everything changed with the pandemic. As her stress levels increased, her husband surprised her by suggesting they look into the possibility of having a home birth, even though this was something he'd laughed at before, and she was already 38 weeks long. Let's get to it. Welcome, Kara. I am so happy to have you here on the show, and congratulations on your new baby.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this is your third baby. How old?
My baby is 2.5 weeks old.
Very, very fresh. I do appreciate you coming on the show to talk about your experience so soon after having, and I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, having him, her?
It's a girl.
Having her. What else do you have at home?
That's my third girl.
Oh, your husband is very outnumbered.
He's very loved.
Why don't you tell us, where were you? Like, take us back to before you had any children, when you were first pregnant. What was your approach towards birth then?
I had a really good friend at the time who had a baby about, she got pregnant maybe almost 9 months before I did. And so I knew that at some point we were going to be starting our family. So I kind of followed her journey. And she had been a marathon runner, a competitive marathon runner. So she was very into health and very into natural things she could do with her body. So she was all about having a natural birth. She hired a doula before her. I had never heard of a doula before. And I kind of followed her journey. And after she had the baby, I wanted to know everything. She had one of those unique 3-hour labors, but she had an incredible experience, and so she told me everything, gave me all her notes and everything, and so that's when I started looking into what kind of birth I wanted and being really intentional about it, as opposed to just, well, I'll just show up at the hospital and see what happens, because that was going to be my original plan. And then I realized, no, I need to be intentional about this. So that was where it all began.
And so what did you do to become intentional? How do you prepare for that first one?
I started looking into doulas. So I interviewed a couple of different doulas, and I really didn't at the time have a clue what I was looking for. I just sort of figured I would know it when I saw it. And kind of different people's, you know, different doulas have different philosophies and different methods, and I didn't really know what I was looking for, but I found somebody at the time. We were living in a different area, and she and I clicked really well, and she was a big proponent of hypnobirthing. And I looked into it, and I was really interested in, in this idea. And so that's what I got started doing. And then I tried to wing the second child without hypnobirthing, and it didn't go as well.
And by
So
that, what do you mean by that? That you didn't prepare? Like, because I find with hypnobirthing, it's a fantastic tool, but you've got to practice it.
you do. Well, so I figured with the second one, I knew everything there was to know. I've had a baby before. Why, I'm a pro at this. And turns out that wasn't the case. So I didn't practice really. I didn't take the time to practice. And I think, especially if you already have a child, you have to actually find the time. Whereas if it's your first, the time is easier to come by. So I didn't practice for my second, and I didn't end up having kind of the birth I had envisioned. So nothing went wrong per se. It just wasn't as calm and as smooth as the first one. And so with the third one, I said, okay, that's it. We're going to go do a refresher course, and we're going to make sure that I practice. And this third one was definitely my best birth.
And tell us, like in broad strokes, what happened during those first two births?
So the first birth was 29 hours of labor. I didn't have any contractions leading up to the birth. I was 40 weeks, 3 days, I guess, and my water broke. So I had no contractions at all. And then 30 minutes after my water broke, it was about 10 o'clock at night, I started having contractions, and they were about every 3 minutes, lasting a minute for 24 hours, more or less. And I had a break in the middle where I kind of petered out a little bit, where my contractions spaced out. And then I ended up going to the hospital at about 24 hours, and then had the baby 5 hours later, hands on my hands and knees, which is now my favorite position to give birth in. And the second one, I was 39 weeks, probably 4-ish days. And again, same thing, my water broke, no previous contractions, and contractions started 30 minutes after my water broke. And then after a couple of hours, we went to the hospital. And I was in the hospital longer with this one. And I stalled when I got to the hospital, and I started to get really nervous that this was taking too long, and it was all in my head. And that goes back to the hypnobirthing and kind of mentally preparing yourself, which I hadn't done. So I was definitely not as calm. And then yeah, I mean, then I had the baby, but I needed Pitocin, and so I was having trouble kind of maintaining the strength of my contractions. So they gave me Pitocin, and my doula had thought that he had excuse me, a hand over her head, and she wasn't going down into the pelvis. So between my doula and my husband, they were able to, with the use of a Rebozo, get the baby down into my pelvis, and I ended up having to kind of lie on my back to keep her there, or recline to keep her there. And I ended up having to deliver on my back, which is not my favorite thing to do. But so that's why with the third one, I really wanted to kind of mentally get myself in the right space.
And it's lovely that you've had a variety of experiences so that you've sort of tested and gone, well, hypnobirthing worked really well. Oh, but I actually need to practice, hands and knees loved it, but then this was this issue and got you in a place where you had I'm guessing, a very good idea of what you were looking for your third one.
Exactly.
Before we get into that one, because we're gonna dive right in, let's take a break. We'll be right back. If you're pregnant, you know you need to take a prenatal vitamin, but the ever elusive question is, which one should you take? I'm super excited to finally have a good answer for you. I have become a huge fan of Full Circle Prenatal, which is also the number one prenatal recommendation of registered dietitian Lily Nichols. Full Circle Prenatal provides evidence-based doses of important nutrients and micronutrients like choline, folate, iodine, vitamin D, active B vitamins, and so much more. It also purposely leaves out things that require a more individually monitored dose, like iron. There isn't a one-size-fits-all when it comes to iron needs, with some people not needing iron supplementation at all, and others needing doses higher than what many prenatal supplements provide. Full Circle Prenatal is iron-free to provide maximum customization while also increasing tolerance. I also appreciate that Full Circle Prenatal undergoes rigorous third-party independent testing to ensure it exceeds even the strictest standards for heavy metals, allergens, and other contaminants. Frankly, it's a shock that most other prenatals don't do this. Go to fullcircleprenatal.com to find out more, and as an exclusive for Birthful listeners, use the code BIRTHFUL to get 10% off your purchase. This cannot be combined with other sales or discounts. Go to Full Circle Prenatal and use the code BIRTHFUL to get 10% off your purchase. And we are back. So, Kara, you've had two kids, and the first one was lovely. The second one had a little bit more complications, but was still lovely, right? It wasn't, yeah.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. It just wasn't the experience that was my favorite, we'll say.
Yeah. Did you, with those two experiences under your belt, were you doing anything different for the third one as you prepared, aside from making sure you did the refresher course for hypnobirthing and practice?
I like you said, I had a much better idea in my head of what I wanted and what I didn't want. And one of the things that my husband kind of helped me flesh out when we were talking about my, the experience I wanted was that I really don't like people touching me while I'm in labor. There's a lot of different things that we realized that, I just sort of want to be in my space and in the zone. And it was really interesting to kind of have that revelation that I actually do have a lot of, I do have a preference for how I want to do this. And it was great to figure that out. So
Well, and also give yourself permission to do it however you wanted to with that, because I find that sometimes there's like judgment and guilt attached to if you don't want to be touched during labor, or if you don't want, that people go like, well, that's weird, which it isn't. It's just, what do you do? And this is just a curious question. What do you do when you stub your toe?
I usually say, ouch. I'm not sure if that's what you're getting at.
Yeah. Well, so I find that sometimes just looking into what you do when you stub your toe can give you an insight of what might be your coping mechanisms during labor, because it's a very automatic to what you would want. So, like, for example, I know when I stub my toe, I just need to rub it really quick. And when people are asking me, like, are you okay? Is it fine? I just don't want to hear anybody. It's like, give me space. Just let me figure this out, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyways, it's like a little experiment that I have going of asking people what they do when they stub their toe.
Okay.
Were there other things from those two births that you were like, yes, this worked really great, or this didn't, I really didn't like this, aside from the touching?
I didn't want anybody to talk to me either. I at this the way we were originally going to do it was I wanted the nurses and everybody to go through my husband, and he could filter out what was necessary, that I make a decision on. But I was kind of said, I just want to deliver the baby. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want anybody to touch me. I don't want to make any decisions. So my husband and I fleshed out ahead of time what, kind of what I wanted and what, what he could bother me for, if you will. And so that was the other major thing was I just want to focus on having the baby. You make the decisions.
And I love that sort of division of responsibilities or focus, because you as the birthing person do need to go deep into your physiology and deep into that labor land, right? And people talking to you and disturbing you, intervening, like all those things do take you out of that mental state, which is important for things to flow.
Yes.
Yeah. What were some of the things that he could quote unquote bother you for?
I'm trying to remember what the main ones were. It was mainly like emergencies. And because he knew, I didn't really want any interventions. I was going to decide if I wanted a cervix check. But don't, unless there's a problem with the baby's heart rate or something that I really need to know, or for example, if my doula had a suggestion for a different position that might help, he could bother me for that. So those kinds of things. But anything else, he knew I didn't want, then don't even bother.
And I like this also clarity that you had in terms of making sure your doula was almost more support for your husband, that which I find that happens a lot during birth, because and depending on what the couple's comfort levels are, right? Some want the doula to be way more involved with mom, some want the doula to be, like in this case, supporting dad and indirectly supporting you that way.
Yeah, and she does both for us generally. Kind of at the beginning, she's supporting dad and kind of telling him, how she can, how he can help me. And then at the end, she has been this I've used the same doula for the last two. We've been in the same area, but the first one we were in a different area and I had a different doula. So this doula knew us pretty well, kind of knew my preferences. So at the end, she helps a lot with counter pressure and different kinds of things. My husband's an engineer and he is not a fan of the medical type stuff. He always stays at the top end. He doesn't want to be down at the business end. And he's kind of squeamish with blood and all that kind of stuff. So we have it very clear with our doula that if there's anything down there or anything medical that needs of a medical nature that needs to be taken care of, then that's her job.
So you sounded like you were, really set. You had your doula, you had come up with a game plan with your husband in terms of how to navigate your experience. You've done this twice before. You were practicing your hypnobirthing. And then
Everything changed.
tell me how it changed. What were the biggest things? Like, what was the first things that came to your mind in terms of questioning, and what were you talking to your provider about?
So things changed, and I think it varies area by area. Things changed relatively slowly for us, but it was like every week there was a new change. And before the virus had kind of, started the lockdowns and everything, our hospital limited doulas so that you couldn't bring in, or limited the support to one person so you couldn't bring in doulas. Then they came back and said, no, doulas are considered medical personnel, so they're allowed. And that went on for 2 weeks. And in those 2 weeks, they had the lockdown. And then my provider's office, or I was seeing a midwife group within an OB practice. So the whole office shut down to kind of mandatory. They didn't do any routine exams. They only did, exams for people who are closer to the end of their pregnancy and people who, had, potential emergencies, things like that. So things began to change week by week, and then the next week came up, and now doulas were no longer allowed. My doula, the company Birth You Desire is the company, and they do virtual. They do virtual doula support, but I didn't like that idea, and I know they've been doing it for a long time, and it's something that they have done continuously throughout this crisis. But I knew that was not what I needed because my husband doesn't do the hands-on stuff. I needed somebody who could help me with that. So the at least the messy hands-on stuff. And
So were you having to figure out, like, discuss and talk about who was going to come in with you in that case? Was that
well, it
even a
was always going to be
consideration?
him. It was always going to be my husband. My doula did tell me that there were a couple of, not everybody in that she was supporting did that. Some people had her as the support person instead of the partner. But for me, it was always going to be my husband. And then New York did that brief time period where they weren't even allowing partners into the, and that terrified me. I was like, oh, there is no way I'm giving birth by myself. God bless the women who did, because I had no intention of doing that. And so yeah, that's, things started to kind of spiral in that way, and it was not the birth I wanted, and it felt very transactional. They were trying to get people in and out, and I think, if you're having a planned C-section or something where you're going to come in at this time and you're going to have, this happen, then I think it would be different. But if you're giving birth, spending hours in labor, you need to mentally, be in a space where you have a lot of support for a long period of time. And I didn't feel like I could do that in the hospital.
So, when did you start considering switching to a home birth, and what did that look like?
I was about 38 and a half, almost 39 weeks pregnant. So
That's
at the
cutting it
very end.
close. Yes.
Yes. it was a it was kind of, I mean, my husband had and I had joked when we had did our hypnobirthing refresher course, we had kind of gone through the timeline of our other births, and he pointed out to me that I always stall when I get to the hospital because I get really nervous and I start to be, become afraid, and then all of a sudden my contractions kind of peter out. And this was a trend that I didn't notice that he pointed out to me. And I was like, well, maybe, we could do a home birth sometime. And he was, haha, very funny. And I guess all he could picture was me just dropping a baby on our kitchen floor, and I was like, I don't think it really works like that. But he was not a fan of the idea originally. When we had joked about it, he was like, absolutely not. And then he was the one who actually brought it up to me when all these things started to happen. Because he said, there's no way I want to miss this. And so didn't really have any issues with the idea. So I kind of reached out to my doula, like, hey, this is something we just talked about. I know it sounds crazy at this stage of the game, but what do you think? And do you know anybody who would take me on this late? And, we talked about it for a little bit, and she'd kind of, said, okay, well, let me get back to you. And she's, attended home births before, and so it wasn't, an odd request, but she, so I kind of figured, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And I'm not going to stress about this. I'm going to continue getting into the mental space I need to be in. And because there's, with the virus and everything, there's enough to be stressed about.
Right, yeah.
So I heard back from her a couple days later, and she said, I think this midwife has space in her schedule for you. Just so happened all of her, March mamas delivered already. And, anyway, here's her number. Give her a call, see what you think. So I thought, oh, okay, guess we're doing this. So I just figured I'd give her a call. And if she had any concerns about taking me this late in the pregnancy or any concerns about anything at all, then I would continue with the hospital birth. But she didn't.
What walk me through what did those conversations, initial conversations look like in terms of the questions she had for you and the questions you had for her? Because I know that having been at home births before and having interacted with home birth midwives, a big part of the process of doing this together is trust in each other. You need to build and have trust. And so if you're switching at 39 weeks, was that a concern of either one of you? And yeah, how did that conversation go?
So that was kind of the first thing I asked her was, is this safe? You don't know me, essentially, and I don't know you, and you don't know my history, and I've been seeing, I knew the other midwives in my practice. One of them delivered my second child, so I knew them really well. And there was, I guess, four or five of them, and made sure to see them all at different appointments so that I, did know them, depending on who was gonna deliver. So she and I went over my medical history, and thankfully I have a very uneventful obstetric medical history. And the other thing is I've given birth twice without an epidural, so she didn't have any concerns about that, because I didn't realize that's a big component of home birth, is a lot of people don't realize there's no drugs available for pain. So if you're, calling for an epidural, it's not going to happen. But I
Well,
had already done
so
that.
yeah, and if you want it, but like what people also don't realize is that a big part of home birth to hospital transfers are not at all emergent. I mean, very rarely are they emergent, but a big part of them are people saying, I can't do this anymore and I want an epidural, or it's the choice to go into the hospital for those other options that are not available at home, not because something's wrong with baby or with the birthing person. But yeah, the fact that you'd done it already, definitely built confidence that you could do it again.
Right. I mean, I didn't have any concerns about that, but I guess she gets calls sometimes from moms saying, I'd love to have a home birth. Can you bring an epidural? And she's like, oh, it doesn't work like that. So, just to make sure that she, that I knew that there wasn't, no anesthesiologist was coming with her. Yeah.
Right. She brings a lot of stuff, oxygen and a lot of,
Right.
Pitocin. She's got stuff, but no epidurals.
Right. So that was another conversation we had, and she knew my doula pretty well. So she had a previous conversation with my doula about me and my, if I was a good candidate for this kind of thing, you know, mentally and emotionally, and did I really realize what, you know, what a home birth means and that kind of thing. And but our conversations at the beginning revolved around the medical history.
And let's take another break. When we come back, I want to ask you a bit about how your husband was feeling with all this. We'll be right back. Breastfeeding, it may be natural, but that sure does not mean it's easy. It's a learning process for both you and baby, and like most learning processes, it takes a lot of trial and error. However, this trial and error can sometimes come with a lot of crying, and not necessarily only from your baby. Help lessen the crying and frustration by arming yourself with some solid knowledge. A great way to prepare for this is by taking the Simply Breastfeeding online class created by breastfeeding experts Cindy and Jana. In their class, you'll learn to recognize what your baby is telling you and how to meet your baby's needs starting in the very first hour after birth. You'll also understand the basics of breastfeeding and be able to return to them if you encounter difficulties, and you'll feel confident knowing the answers to most frequently asked questions. Lessen your anxiety and frustration and relax knowing you've got this. Go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding to learn more. And as a Birthful listener, you get 15% off if you use the code Birthful when you register. Go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding or click the link on the show notes to get you on your way. And we are back. So you seem to have had a really good first initial meeting where the midwife was feeling that this was going to work out and it was safe. You were feeling reassured by her. But originally, your husband was like, no, there's no way we're not doing this, even though then it became his idea. Where did he stand on all this now?
So he had a lot of questions for her during our initial meeting about the logistics. Like any good engineer, you know, how does this work and what do I need to buy? You know, what do I need to do? And, you know, am I going to be cleaning, you know, amniotic fluid out of my, you know, the grout in my kitchen for several years?
And he's the squeamish one, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, yeah. So all those kinds of things, he was, he had a lot of questions for her about all of that. And it turned out that somebody in his office had had four kids all at home. And so he explained to my husband how they did it and kind of the things that they used that were helpful for them. And this guy was also an engineer. So everything kind of fit and lined up just the way an engineer thinks. So it ended up being a real benefit that he knew somebody who could kind of help him, you know, figure out what he needed to do and how, you know, what he needed to get. And so he was all on board. And I think the main thing for him was he wanted me to feel really comfortable. So he didn't get involved with my choice of midwife. His main thing was the questions of logistics.
Well, and I love that you, for your first birth, had kind of your pregnancy birth mentor and your friend who had just gone ahead, and you could ask her all the questions. And then he had his own kind of home birth mentor in this coworker that told him all the logistics that he needed to figure out.
Yeah, it actually made him a lot more comfortable, knowing that somebody else had, you know, that he knew and respected had done this. And there's a very easy way for the mess not to bother you and that kind of thing. So it was great.
Do you know what were some of those things that this coworker told him, that how to make things flow better for a home birth?
Yeah, they're very practical things. Like you know, the midwife had said, you know, put something under your sheets so that if you decide to give birth in the master, you don't get the mattress dirty and that kind of stuff. So she had kind of explained to me how that works. And then my husband's friend had said, okay, yeah, but here's what you really should do. And it was make the bed like you would normally, and then put a shower curtain on top of the bed, unfolded, so it covers all, the whole bed, and then put towels down, and then put a throwaway sheet on top of that. So when you're all done, all you have to do is pick up from the shower curtain, throw that out, and you can get right in bed after you have the baby.
I love that trick. I know that trick and I love that trick. 'Cause it's really not, I mean, did you find it very messy?
No, I didn't, but I mean, I'm not very squeamish, so.
So, in terms of you, what did you do last minute to prepare for a home birth? Did you have to adjust anything, do you find?
No, I don't think so. I think it was the smoothest transition for me. The idea that I didn't have to pick up and go anywhere. I mean, there was a lot more of that practical stuff, like let's get a couple extra towels or, let's get, random stuff like that, more diapers because we're not going to be at the hospital where they, throw those packs at you to take home. So let's, it's kind of practical stuff like that, but nothing in the mental space because I found it just to be the easiest transition.
So then, how did it start? How did it happen?
So I, about oh, 10 days before it, I actually went into labor. I had thought I went into labor. I had prodromal labor for probably 10 hours where my contractions were coming every 6 minutes, lasting about 50 seconds to a minute. And I was kind of expecting them to, get stronger and closer together, and they didn't. And I had even had my parents take the kids and everything. So we had a false alarm, which was almost embarrassing for my third child. You would think I would know, but it kind of took me by surprise, and it just was prodromal labor, and that was it. And I didn't actually go into labor for another 10 days.
And it's funny because, in doula circles and like midwifery circles, we always talk about third babies are the wild card. Second babies
It's so funny, yeah.
tend to come quicker, not always the case, but third babies just tend to throw you for a loop.
It's funny you say that because my doula kept reminding me of that. She kept saying, "It's your third one. It's your third one. There's going to be something wacky about it." So, and it
Yeah.
turned out there was.
So, and how far along were you at that point?
I was 39 weeks, just had turned 39 weeks at that point.
So you had just switched to home birth.
Yes, like maybe a few days before. I mean, if that, maybe 2 days.
Oh wow. So then, yeah, what did that prodromal birth do to your head?
Oh, it was very upsetting. I guess I'll call it upsetting. You're at the end of your pregnancy and you're just like, gosh, get this baby out. I want to be done. And I had thought, I had, mentally moved into the labor space and turned out that that was not the case. And I was pretty, gutted that I was still pregnant. And I got to a point too where I was just like, I just want to have a baby. I just want the baby. And then it was another 10 days of monitoring. So it was really hard, waiting those 10 days for sure.
Yeah, and I said prodromal birth, and I should have said prodromal labor. But what did you? So those 10 days were really hard because you were waiting and nothing was happening. Were you doing anything to try to get you back into that headspace of relaxation and trust?
Yes. So I took a lot of, one of my favorite places to kind of relax is the bath or the shower. So I did a lot of that. I had this, like this oils and things you can put in the bath to make it, the scrubs and stuff you can put in the bath to make it smell nice. Those help me kind of get into the the zone. And I just tried to really take care of myself mentally in that way to, especially when we got the kids back. And, when if you have young kids, your life is hardly your own. So spending time after the kids went to bed to actually, calm myself down and realize, everything's fine, I'm fine, the baby's healthy, I'm healthy. Let's do this, let's relax, we'll get through this. But it take again that you have to be intentional about that. It does take a lot of effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, yeah, this baby was really throwing you for a loop. So,
Yeah.
did it 10 days later, did things begin like with your other two where your water broke before contractions started?
Nope, not even close. It was very strange. With the other two, my water broke in the evening. And they were very predictable, the other two. Well, after the first one, the second one would have been very predictable. But this was, I started having contractions as I woke up. So it was probably 6:30 in the morning, having contractions, but light contractions, just like I had been having. And I had called my mom and I had said, listen, I need to relax. I need some time. Can you take the kids for a little bit? So my mom came and took the kids. And I w went to go for a walk, and all of a sudden the contractions started getting really strong. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. And it was really cold out, and I had not dressed properly for the weather. So I turned around probably, I mean, half, not even halfway through, and walked back. And I got home, and the contractions were really starting to come faster, starting to pick up. And I thought, well, that's weird. And I didn't want to get excited because of what had happened, 10 days prior. But so I went to go sit down and watch a movie, kind of take my mind off of it. And then they really started picking up, and they were about every 5 minutes. And so I had called my doula and said, well, here's what's going on. And then they started to really pick up in intensity, and I took a shower, and then and yeah, and so that's kind of how everything got started.
And where was your husband at? Were you cluing him in? Was he around?
Yeah, he was home working. I had been working too, but I kind of took the day off because I wasn't, because of the contractions that started so early. I was like, yeah, I'm just not feeling well. I'm gonna take the day off. So he was working in the home office, and yeah, I had kind of let him know here and there,
Was he seeing you? Things changed with you? And was he like picking up on that? When you called your doula and gave her the heads up, were you thinking come over now or not yet? Like what?
No, I told her not to come over just yet because I was like, I'm not 100% sure. And she said, okay, then you need to be really open with me and communicate every change. So I communicated, I texted her every time something changed. And not even an hour later, she said, okay, I'm coming. And thankfully, she actually doesn't live too far away from me. So it was, almost like two neighborhoods over. So, really easy for her to get to me. So she came over, and when she got to the house, she called the midwife and said, "Okay, here's my assessment. You wanna come over, but don't, run any traffic lights getting here." So.
Okay, and you hadn't contacted your midwife before that.
No, I had not.
Right, because you weren't sure of what was going on.
Right.
I love your, that's weird, kind of.
Yeah. It was definitely, because I guess I had in my head, after two previous births that had gone almost exactly the same, that this was just what my body did. And turns out that's not the case.
And so things were picking up and getting more intense. What was going on next?
So then the midwife came in with her assistant, and they just kind of quietly snuck in, and my husband took them, showed them where to sit up and everything. And I didn't really, one of the main things I wanted, as I mentioned before, was I wanted it to be really quiet and really calm. And so they just kind of snuck off, and I didn't really notice them until later. And but they were there. I mean, just kind of, ready when they needed to be. And so I mean, it was a really, really short labor for me, considering my first was 29 hours, my second was 19. This one in active labor was 7 hours. I mean, it was a huge jump. And I credit that to the comfort of being in my own home, not having to get up and go anywhere, get in the car and sit. I don't know, I find it uncomfortable being in the car when you're having a contraction, sitting in that seat and everything. I just, not a fan. And getting to the hospital and having to answer questions, did you pre-register? I mean, you take all that off the table and it's just, you just go straight through. And so it was much quicker for me. It was much smoother. And then after I found kind of a spot in my living room where I was really comfortable. And the midwife would come in and, check the baby's heart rate and things like that. Take my vitals. And then my doula, as labor goes on, I usually get more and more stubborn, and I don't want to listen to what anybody has to say. So my doula, knowing that, was trying to make a suggestion of changing positions, and I said no, and I kept telling her no. And so finally she and the midwife came and said, I really think that you should change, let's go to the toilet, and to sit backwards on the toilet. And I had probably six contractions on the toilet, and that was when the doula was helping me with counter pressure, and she kind of gave me a couple of visuals to help, move the baby down into my pelvis, and I thought that was really useful. And then we moved to the master bedroom, and I had originally thought I didn't want to be in the master bedroom, but it actually ended up being a very comfortable place. And I did a couple of contractions there, and it turns out I was 10 centimeters. And that was a huge shock for me because I had been 5 to 6 only, 2 hours before. So things were moving very quickly, which is, that third wild card birth, which was so different. And then I started pushing, and I think I pushed for about 4 minutes and I had a baby.
Oof. And did you feel like baby's coming and there's no stopping it? Or were you checked and said, you're 10, time to push? Like, how did that go? How did you know it was pushing time? Or did your body just tell you?
My body told me. I was really surprised when she said I was complete. I didn't feel like pushing. I mean, I had thought maybe I was 7 or 8, maybe. So when she said you're complete, I said, so I can push. And she said, when you feel ready, when your body tells you. And I really do, my body did tell me. It's almost a relief to go from a contraction to a push. So I find that my body almost does that automatically. I don't really have to think about it, but I'm not going to push unless my body makes that transition.
And I think that's something that people need to hear more, that just because you get to 10 doesn't mean you're ready to push, that at that point the baby might still be like the head is still being held by the lower uterine segment and might be looking to the side, which is the way babies go into the pelvis before they rotate the head. So maybe that rotation hasn't quite happened and the head is still being contracted. Like, just getting to 10 is opening the door, is not necessarily. Things tend to go much better when, as you describe it, you just wait for that, your body to tell you and have a clear indication of, oh yeah, it's time to push, rather than, well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I probably had two more contractions after she said you're complete. And I think at that point, you know, your body can kind of take over and do its own thing. And so my big focus, or my big, you know, the main thing that I really wanted to do was relax and focus on relaxing and allowing my body to do its thing and let the baby out. And I figured if I could do that, then my body would do what it needed when it needed to.
I love that because that's another thing that at that time it can be really hard to do when there's so much intensity, but letting things open so that baby can come out instead of tightening against the sensation is huge.
Oh, it takes an enormous amount of mental energy, which is why when I told my husband, "You just take care of everything, I'm gonna be over here trying to relax."
Was you were telling him that right before, but before starting to push?
No, when we
Oh.
were, you know, talking about our, you know, our plan and everything, yeah, I knew that it takes an like it takes everything to keep yourself relaxed. That's all you can do. At least for me, that's all I can do. That's the only that it takes so much mental energy that I don't have the ability to make any other decisions.
And you said you pushed hands and knees, and that's your favorite position. How did you get to there? Was that also intentional, or you just naturally ended up there?
I think both. I had figured I wanted to do hands and knees, and then it felt comfortable at the time. And so I kind of crawled up onto the master bed and was in my hands and knees. And I started pushing on my hands and knees, and I got her head out. And it was a big baby, so they weren't sure if the shoulders would get stuck or anything. And so I got her head out, and I kind of stopped and waited. And they were not sure if the shoulders were stuck, so they had me get into that runner's lunge, and that was how I got the rest of the baby out. So I started out hands and knees, got the baby's head out, and then runner's lunge, and got the rest of the baby out.
And you said that you pushed for about 4 minutes and then she was out. I'm guessing that runner's lunge or whatever they were concerned with was did the trick, and it didn't go beyond a thought that maybe you needed a position change.
Exactly.
Excellent. And so then, how was that immediate postpartum being at your house?
Oh, it was so nice. It was so great. I mean, you're sleeping in your own bed that night, and we have an awesome mattress. And so, you know, you don't have to, you know, in the hospital, you know, you're in, you know, a different bed, and I don't know, they're usually not that comfortable. And you know, my previous births, we could kind of order out and eat whatever we wanted, but the hospitals had shut all that down with the virus, so you had to eat the hospital food. And so it was nice. We ordered out for Indian food. So for dinner, it was great, and I mean, it was so comfortable.
What? Oh, you mentioned your baby was big. Oh, how big?
10 pounds, 2 ounces, 22.5 inches long.
Yeah, that's a good size baby.
Yeah.
And did you have any tear?
Just a small first degree tear. That was another one of the things that I had mentioned. I had a second degree tear with my second child that hadn't healed well and needed some follow-on support to get it healed properly. And that was one of the things I had told the midwife, was that I was concerned about that happening again. And she had talked about some of the ways to minimize perineal tearing and that kind of thing. And she actually, during the pushing phase, gave perennial support. And I think that's one of the things that helped a lot, with minimizing any issues.
What were some of the things that she told you ahead of time to help you minimize perineal tearing?
So then that goes back to the pushing, not pushing until your body's ready. Trying not to, bear down with, a lot of force while you're, if your body's not telling you to, and those types of things were the main thing. And then she said she can give, perennial support with the hot compresses, and those were the main things.
What about your other two kids? When did they come back home and meet their sibling, their sister?
So let's see, that was, I think 4 days later. So I had the baby on the Friday before Easter, and the holiday kind of complicated things a little bit. So I left the kids with my parents for a couple more days just so they could enjoy the holiday with my parents.
And in terms of COVID stuff, were you guys concerned at all? Like, were your parents already isolating? How is that working?
Yeah, so that was a huge concern for my parents, because they are in that age bracket, and their medical history is such that they would not be in a good spot if they were exposed. And my parents are also really worried about me, and because they knew that they were the plan for the kids when I gave birth. So for my parents, isolated for a month before I had the baby. And they stocked up food ahead of time and everything, so they wouldn't even have to interact with anybody or go to the store or get deliveries or anything like that, because they were pretty worried about it.
And that's one thing we've been seeing around here in terms of recommendations, especially for home births, is to have the pregnant family isolate, like truly isolate, 2 weeks before their due date and until baby is born, just because you also want to. We want to safeguard the midwives, the home birth midwives, that they don't, because if they get sick, then that's a huge loss. You can't just have people shift change and somebody else come in, right? Yeah. And you don't want them spreading anything into the community either. So, yeah. Did she have any, did your midwife have any requests like that? Or did you go, what did you guys do?
So she did kind of talk me through what some of the things that they were going to do. The whole team wore masks and gloves, and all, even for routine when they did routine visits, and just to be safe. Even now, when she's doing the postpartum stuff, I've never. I mean, I've maybe once seen my midwife's face, which is funny because, like you said, you need a lot of trust. And here I've only ever seen her with a mask on. But so yeah, that was one of the things where she talked about, and they had to switch all their instruments into, they didn't use any cloth type tote bags or any, I don't know, there's a couple of other things she mentioned that I can't remember the names of off the top of my head, but everything they switched to was things that they could sterilize or wipe down with those Lysol wipes, so that after every house they visited, they could wipe everything down.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's another big difference. As you were speaking, I was reminded of another big difference with home births is that usually once you leave the hospital, like you're there for at least, depending on the hospital, depending birth center, you're there for, well, hospitals 24 hours, birth centers, it can be a lot shorter. But with midwives, home birth midwives, they come and they do several visits within those first few days. It's not like if you're at a hospital, you usually don't see your provider until 6 weeks or sometimes before that if something's going on. But how often did she come to visit? Did your midwives come visit after the baby was born?
A couple times, I think maybe two or three times in the, probably 2 times in the first couple days. And then again at the 2 week mark. And then I'll probably see her in another week. And she's had said, I can come if you want me to, but if you want me to wait until 6 weeks, I can do that too. And I said, just come and make sure everything looks good. And, so that is the one thing that I've absolutely loved is that I do feel very well taken care of.
And are you having to take baby to pediatrician at all, or is she taking care of all the baby checks as well?
So she did, and she actually offered to do a help me with a telehealth visit for the pediatrician. So she could be the pediatrician's hands, and the pediatrician could just be on the video call or whatever. And so we wouldn't have to go into the pediatrician's office. But my pediatrician had said, listen, that sounds like a great idea, but I'd really love to listen to her heart. The heart makes, is the one thing that I want to listen to myself. So she asked us to come in. So we did go into the pediatrician.
And that makes sense in terms of provider comfort. I do know that the home birth midwives do carry different things to assess heart as well when they come back to the check. So that's one difference of like the Venn diagram of home birth midwives versus hospital midwives or any hospital provider, right? That for hospital care or and even birth center care, no, I don't know about birth center care, but hospital care, you have. There's providers that take care of the birthing person, and then there's the providers that take care of the baby. Whereas the
Right.
home birth midwife has to have the knowledge of both. And we usually why they travel in pairs. Like you said, it was your midwife come with her assistant, because if there's a situation, one is focused on you and the other one's focused on the baby. There's two patients in that case.
Yeah, they she definitely she had mentioned that when we had talked to her. She had said, that a lot of paramedics, for example, have told her that they would rather be called to a death than a birth because a birth is easy to screw up in that, if something goes wrong, you have to know what you're doing because there's two people now instead of just one person. And so she had all of this, stuff to kind of do the, and the screenings too. I think they're required by state or, and you probably know what I'm talking about. I don't remember what they're called, but where they take the babies, prick the baby's heel and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, for glucose levels? Or no, sorry, for just the blood check. They have to do it with some blood tests.
Right. Yeah, I think it varies state to state. But I mean, she did all of that. She did all of that. So, I mean, it was very easy.
I mean, it is remarkable the amount of knowledge that they have, and the amount of responsibility that they take on, and why it's so important that they assess for your case to be a low risk birth, right? If there's anything that's making them feel uneasy, they're like, no.
Exactly.
So then we were talking a little bit before we started recording that this postpartum has been so lovely because you've had your husband at home longer due to COVID. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think in some, it's a in some ways a double-edged sword because he still had to, has to work. So he's at home, but he still has to work. But I have his support whenever I need it. So I can, run in and get a hug anytime I want one. And, he eats 3 meals a day with the family. And, I think the level of support, even though he's still working, the level of support is much higher.
Now, did you find that your larger village of support, how have they had to switch things around, or you have had to switch things around with not being able to get, more family help in the house or friends or people,
Yeah, I would say that's been difficult, because I don't can't really go see anybody else, and the friends who would normally come visit me and all those kinds of things are not on the table. So a lot of friends sent meals, via app or delivery or whatever, groceries, that kind of thing. My in-laws sent some stuff via Amazon. So that kind of thing has been very distant, which is a bummer, but at least there's the, they sent help as best they could. But definitely the social interaction, I think, is a huge part of that postpartum phase. So not having that, I think it is frustrating and difficult, but they sent their love as best they could.
Are you doing Zoom meetings and that kind of thing to see them a little bit, or just talking on the phone, right?
Yeah, I've been talking on the phone a lot to some of my really good friends, and video conferencing my family pretty frequently, just to kind of, maintain that relationship.
And you had also mentioned just before we jumped on that he, with the other two pregnancies, and postpartum, you did experience some postpartum mood disorders. How's that going with this one?
This one's been much easier, I would say. And I do think it has to do with my husband being home. Having your friends around and everything is great, but my husband and I have a really great relationship, so that's been a huge help. And I didn't think about that before I had the baby, because we had, again, before the virus, we had made totally different plans for how the postpartum phase was going to go, with different, that village, as you said, different people coming in to help. But now it's just us. It's just our, little core family. And while that has put a strain on getting everything done, and the house is probably messier than it would have been, the important thing has become us and our family and our relationship. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Well, and it's, many other cultures for a long, long time have been practicing the idea of 40 days staying home, the cuarentena, or the baby moon in China, of just, or that golden moon in China, of having the birth person just be supported and have the family be taken care of and staying at their home. And I find that this is giving us like a forced taste of that. Not quite the best situation, because ideally you would do this plus have your family and friends come and visit and support you more, right? That big village. But I think that's something that we have to remember of how those experiences, and compare and contrast, and maybe try to get things move more towards this and actually have proper family paid leave for a long time, because it does affect mental health and how we grow our families, which impacts everything in our communities for sure. Kara, is there anything before we close that you wanted to make sure the listeners knew about?
I guess just don't be afraid of home birth if you're low risk. I was not considering it at all until this whole thing, and it turned out to be the best birth I've had. So don't rule it out.
Thank you so very much for doing this. I so appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. The class is going to set you up to do way more than just survive those first few weeks with your newborn, but you want to make sure you take them before baby arrives. So go sign up at birthfulcourses.com right now and let's get you postpartum ready. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful patrons, and the wonderful people at Full Circle Prenatal and Simply Breastfeeding. Go to fullcircleprenatal.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off your order. And go to birthful.com/simplybreastfeeding and use the code BIRTHFUL for 15% off. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. And here is what Kara had for breakfast.
Oatmeal.
She's like, just oatmeal, nothing else.
Well, I put peanut butter in it, if that makes a difference. Some tea. I like tea.
I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Lozada.